on, y'all? It's Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. Back at it once again. It's your man, JB Hicks, here behind the microphone. We have so much to get to today. Yeah, I don't even know where to begin. I was having a tough time trying to get the rundown together for, you know, for how I was going to lay out this podcast, man. We got so much to discuss. We're going to get into some college football talk, obviously. The Heisman Trophy presentation is Saturday night, and we'll get into a little bit of discussion about that. We'll talk a little bit about last Saturday's bowl games, but the championship week and how the BCS ended up playing out there for the championship and what we expect there. We'll dive into the NFL momentarily as far as the playoff positioning seems to be shaking out for a lot of these teams. And on the hip-hop side of things, we're going to get into the Grammy nominations. Big week for Kendrick Lamar, Macklemore, Jay-Z, and we'll get into all of that. And the the hilarious Wale versus Complex magazine situation that came out of nowhere, like a Beyonce album. It just came out of nowhere just the other day. We'll get into all of that and a lot more. But first, we're going to start with the story that's dominated the majority of the football headlines this week, that being Robert Griffin III and his benching in Washington. The Washington Redskins have now named Kirk Cousins the starting quarterback for the final three games of the year. Robert Griffin III will be benched, and he'll have to sit there and like it, is what Mike Shanahan has essentially said. Mike Shanahan being the head coach of the Washington Redskins, and the situation between Griffin, Shanahan, Shanahan's son, Kyle Shanahan, who is the offensive coordinator, in case you don't know, and the Redskins owner, Dan Snyder. It's getting a little tense between that foursome, and with the Shanahans on one side, seemingly, and Snyder and Griffin on the other. It's been really bizarre to watch the whole thing unfold, especially seeing as how much promise this Redskins team had just as recently as 12 months ago. We kind of should have seen this coming to some degree. I mean, you know, we did our preseason projections of the 2013 NFL regular season back in August and September, and we had the Redskins not making the playoffs this year. We saw them taking a step back, specifically after Robert Griffin went down with the knee injury last year. But I don't think anybody could have predicted that the Redskins season would have turned out this way. Right now, they're 3-10 through 13 games, and they just seem hopeless. They seem absolutely hopeless on all fronts. Let's start with this. The allegations of Mike Shanahan sabotaging Robert Griffin and sabotaging the team, that's pretty funny. But people really believe that by benching RG3, Shanahan is deliberately trying to sabotage Griffin, and he's trying to get himself fired in order to collect the $9 million or whatever that's left on his deal, that he's going to get paid regardless, even if he gets fired. So basically, he's going to get paid $9 million to go sit on his ass next year and not do anything. And he's trying to bait Dan Snyder, the owner, into firing him in order so he can, live life on Easy Street for a little bit. I don't know if that's true or not, and I definitely don't know that he's out to sabotage RG3 specifically. But there's a lot of blame to go around in this situation. I know that there was at least one story out there from I believe Sally Jenkins of the Washington Post. She's basically gone out and laid the blame on Dan Snyder. She's basically saying, you know what, this is Dan Snyder's fault. He and RG3 have been buddy-buddy, and by benching RG3 for Kirk Cousins, this is the only move that Shanahan had left, and this was his power play. And by doing so, he's forcing the Snyder-Griffin relationship to come to light. And if ownership backs RG3 to the extent that Shanahan claims it does, then it'll be reflected by him getting fired. And that basically this was the only move Shanahan had left, and that it's Snyder that's actually doing the sabotaging. He's the one that actually sabotaged Mike Shanahan. There's a lot of sabotage allegations going on here, people, and that's a heavy word. You know, we're not just going to throw that about like everybody else seems to be doing, but it's pretty toxic in Washington at this point. You can't really blame RG3 for being tight with Dan Snyder, or Dan Snyder wanting to be tight with RG3 at this point, because it's hard for Robert Griffin to trust this coaching staff. I mean, why should he? This is the coaching staff between Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan, the offensive coordinator. They were sending him out on fly patterns last year, and he was getting smacked by safeties and stuff like that. Like, they never really did a lot to protect RG3 in that regard. RG3 ran the ball effectively last year. He probably ran it a little bit too much. And this year, Washington kept falling behind early in games, which forced Robert Griffin to have to throw a lot in these games, and it didn't allow them to run the ball as much as they should have. And the Redskins are actually still really effective at running the football. They're actually tied for first in the NFL in yards per rush attempt right now, and they're also tied for second. I believe they're second in the league in rushing yards, but they're way down in attempts by comparison. Last year, they had Alfred Morris, who was a rookie, and he came out of nowhere and was second in the league in rushing. Alfred Morris was second in the league in rushing touchdowns last year. He was averaging 21 carries a game last year. Now he's down to under 17 carries a game. So the fact that the Redskins have fallen behind in all these games so early has been part of the reason why they haven't been able to run the ball as much as they probably should have. But that's something that they should have emphasized anyway, given the fact that Griffin has had this knee injury that he was gassed up to come back from. And this is where Griffin's own ego needs to get checked at the door. I don't know who was actually at fault for this, whether it was Griffin himself just believing that he was Superman, or Adrian Peterson, right? Or if it was the marketing campaign of just the team, or you know, Griffin sponsors or whoever it was that gassed him up to think that he could come back from this injury that he suffered in last year's playoffs, you know, at the start of this year in week one, and be the same guy. He wasn't the same guy. You could watch the games and tell he wasn't the same guy. Go back and look at YouTube highlights from Robert Griffin last year. Look at the run he had against the Vikings last year, that 75-yard touchdown run. We haven't seen anything close to that same burst from RG3 at any point this year. He's not the same guy. He hasn't been healthy. He's been playing on one leg all season. And this is the one thing I can say in defense of Mike Shanahan. It probably is best that Robert Griffin sit out the final three games of the year, because he's not physically ready to play. All he's going to do is get beat up by defenses because their offensive line can't help him and they can't protect him. They can't keep him upright. You know, he's forced to scramble. He's playing on that disgrace of a field at FedEx Field. And that's why guys are always tearing their knees up on that field. Adrian Peterson tore his knee up on that field. Chris Clemens tore his knee up on that field. RG3 tore his knee up on that field. So, I mean, that's on Snyder. The situation with them not running it as much as they should and not protecting Griffin from himself, that's on Shanahan. It's so funny to me that how we have the Jay Cutler situation from a few years ago, right? And Jay Cutler, he got knocked out of the NFC Championship game or whatever, and he didn't come back in right away, I guess. And the fans crushed Jay Cutler for that, and he still, to this day, is still getting crap for that. And that's why Jay Cutler tried to come back early from his injury this year, and then he took another injury, and then he was out there playing with a pulled groin or whatever, and then he injured his ankle. He wasn't healthy, but he had no choice because the fans and the media were hounding him for not sticking it out and playing while he was injured. So now we have RG3, who doesn't want to get that Jay Cutler label, because Lord knows, once you get that label of being a punk, right, that's almost impossible to shake. He doesn't want that label. He's just fresh in the NFL. He was rookie of the year last year. That's the last thing he needs, is that kind of reputation. So he's going to want to try to play through this knee injury. But it's Mike Shanahan's responsibility to check him at the door and say, yo, you're not right. It's not in your best interest, and it's not in our team's best interest to put you out there. And just because you say you're fine doesn't mean I'm going to allow you to play hurt. We all play Pop Warner or football back in the day, high school football, middle school, whatever. You don't tell the coach you want to come out. That's the last thing you do. The coach says you're tired. You say, no, I'm not tired. You know, I mean, that's just how you do it, right? I mean, you don't tell the coach you're tired. You don't tell the coach you're injured, because you don't want people to think you're a punk. And RG3 didn't want people to think he was a punk. And so they ran him out there at the beginning of the year when he wasn't ready, and it submarined their entire season from the beginning. So that is the thing that really bothers me from the perspective of the fans for the Washington Redskins. I just don't understand how their fans are supposed to get behind this from jump. When we even talked about it on the website. From the beginning, this was just a bad idea of playing Robert Griffin. And now, you know, in true ass backwards fashion, now they're going to pull him at the end of the year when the games don't mean anything. But At the end of the day, when you look at this Redskins situation, I've kind of bounced around a bit, and I apologize if that sounded a little disjointed, but when you look at the Redskins situation, y'all, you have three main components. You have Griffin, you have Schneider, and you have Shanahan. Customarily, Dan Schneider has butchered these types of situations with players and coaches and the dynamic between the two, and finding the right mixture of a coach who can also run the personnel department. That's all been on Dan Schneider in recent years. And people have known for some time that Robert Griffin had some diva tendencies. That's not a breaking news either. But Mike Shanahan has to shoulder the responsibility of this situation. This is on him. He had total control, y'all. He had control of personnel. He had control of the coaching staffs. He had control of switching the defense over to a 3-4, and that hasn't worked because the Washington defense is garbage, right? And then he had control over whether or not RG3 played in the playoffs last year when he wasn't right, and he had control over playing RG3 at the start of this season. And at every step, Shanahan has made mistakes, and now he's trying to loop back around and force all the blame on Schneider and Griffin. I'm not buying it, y'all. Jason Lockenfor for CBSSports.com did a phenomenal piece on why Mike Shanahan should shoulder the responsibility of this car crash of a season that the Redskins have had, and I'm with him. This is on Shanahan's watch. He was in charge of everything, and it just goes to show you, man, that these coaches that think that they need to have total control over everything, it just generally doesn't work out that well. Like, we all remember Bill Parcells with the famous phrase of, you know, well, if I'm the cook, I should at least be able to shop for the groceries. Well, yeah, you can have a say-so what goes on the list, but you don't have to be the only guy that picks the food. You know, that's how I feel about it. You need to have the situation in New England with Bill Belichick basically running the coaching staff and the player personnel staff, that rarely works out that well. Usually you need a GM and a coach that are on the same page, and there's nothing wrong with having two intelligent voices in the room when it comes to player personnel decisions. And that's what a smart franchise does. They have their GM, they have their coach, they may disagree on some things, but philosophically they're on the same page, they buy into the same general principles, and they move forward amicably, and they build their franchise that way. That's the wisest way to do it. So I feel for the Redskins fans, y'all, and as a Cleveland Browns fan for my entire life, believe me, I know what it's like to have a team that can't get right, but at least y'all have a star quarterback. Hopefully Shanahan will go, and you'll be able to move forward with RG3. You won't get that high draft pick this year because you gave that up to St. Louis to get Robert Griffin in the first place, but at least you still have RG3. Let him heal up. Get some coaches in there that are going to be on the same page as the general manager who you hire first, and then move forward, and I think the Redskins will be able to turn it around. Last thing I'll say about Robert Griffin, man, is what's funny about RG3's situation to me is that now that he's benched, or that he was about to get benched, and as bad as he looked against Kansas City last week, you hear everybody coming out the woodwork now saying, oh man, RG3, he's not playing well. He doesn't deserve to be the starter. Kirk Cousins is better than him. They'll win more games with Cousins and this, that, and the third. And, you know, RG3's regress. That's the thing I've been hearing a lot all weekend on television and in the media. RG3's regressed this year. I'm buying RG3 stock, y'all. I don't know about you guys, but I'm not buying this whole everybody just down on this kid all of a sudden. He was the, you know, he was everybody's favorite player last year. You know, everybody was flocking to Subway to buy sandwiches because RG3 said so, right? And then now this year, all of a sudden, he doesn't deserve to be the starting quarterback. And, you know, he's regressed, and he's, you know, he's the lowest on the totem pole of the young quarterbacks in the league and all this. I'm not buying none of that. RG3 is still a phenomenal player and quarterback. I think he needs to mature a little bit, and he'll be a better leader, and I think that he needs to get healthy, and if he can, if it's a big if, but if he can ever get back to the player that he was as far as having that explosiveness on the ground, I think he'll be fine, and we'll see the Redskins get better. They'll improve. I mean, there's nowhere to go but up, right? They'll improve, certainly, with a healthy RG3 and a new coaching staff behind him. You know, it's funny, man. I don't watch Eli Manning stink out the joint for 15 weeks, and nobody's ever thought about benching him or said that he's regressed or anything like that. You know, they just give him a pass because he's Eli. Why do they give him a pass? I mean, those Super Bowls, I mean, yeah, he won, but I mean, he's been inconsistent his entire career, and now he's back in the toilet. Nobody gives a damn. I don't understand it. looking at the rest of the NFL, real quickly, we saw the Denver Broncos take an L on Thursday Night Football. San Diego executed a fantastic game plan. They played keep away all night. That Denver defense, y'all, I've been writing it on the website. I've been tweeting about it. That Denver defense, that's not Super Bowl caliber defense, y'all. I don't even know how else to say it. They are a very good team. Denver could get to the big game. I don't see them winning it yet. I'm not going to see them winning it at all, but the defense is as much to blame as anything. As hard as I am on Peyton Manning, the defense is just not up to snuff. And we saw that as the Chargers kind of did whatever they wanted to do, and they pushed them around on the line of scrimmage. They were blowing them off the ball all night, and you're not going to win that way, even if you have Peyton Manning. So it really changes the landscape in the AFC playoff picture. The Patriots now are in control of their own destiny, so to speak. If they can win out, then they'll receive the number one seed and home field throughout the AFC playoffs. And theoretically, Denver would have to travel to New England if they were to meet in the AFC Championship game under that scenario. I don't see the Patriots winning out, though. That's the only catch. New England has three games left, and I think the last one's home against Buffalo, but they're on the road at Miami this week, and they're at Baltimore next week. Between those three games, I think they're going to lose at least one of them, especially without Gronkowski. And so we will see Denver, I think, back in pole position in the AFC before long. And in the NFC, Seattle still running roughshod over everybody despite the loss last week. I expected them to lose that game to San Francisco. That game just meant more to San Francisco than it did to them. But San Francisco barely won. That was not Seattle's best game. San Francisco seemed like they played their heart out, and they barely got the W. So if I'm a Niners fan, I'm a little bit leery that we ain't got it this year. You know, I don't think anybody's going to go into Seattle and beat them. The only thing Seattle has to worry about right now, besides their players all getting suspended for Adderall or whatever, the only thing the Seahawks have to worry about right now, in my opinion, is playing with expectations. There's one thing to win, and then there's another thing to winning with expectations. That's pretty much the last hurdle that great teams have to conquer. You know, you have to get your star player and get your coaching staff in place and all that stuff. Then you have to learn how to, you know, manage games. Then you have to learn how to win. Then you have to learn how to win on the road. Then you have to learn how to come from behind and win. I mean, there's different levels of winning, you know. There's levels to this. And the Seahawks are on the last level. They've learned how to win. They've learned how to win the games that they're supposed to win. They've learned how to win the games that they probably shouldn't have won. But now they need to learn how to win with expectations. And winning with expectations is very different from just winning. We've seen teams in the past, not only in football but in other sports, that have gotten to the point where they can win. But then when the pressure's on them because they're supposed to win because of the better team, and they fall flat on their face. And so everybody's on the Seattle bandwagon now. We had Seattle winning the Super Bowl before the season started. A lot of people did. A lot of people had other teams winning, though. And now everybody seems to be all in on the Seattle Seahawks and saying that this is the best team in the NFL. How are they going to respond to that? How is Pete Carroll going to keep them focused on the task at hand and not get, you know, blindsided by the expectations of greatness? And so that's the biggest thing that Seattle has to conquer at this point. And if they're able to master that, I don't see anybody beating them. We're going to try to move this podcast on a little bit, y'all. Last one ran a little bit long, and I apologize for that. So I'm going to try to keep this one moving. We'll try to keep it into a decent amount of time, I guess. So let's talk a little college football at this time. The Heisman Trophy winner will be announced very soon. I have Jameis Winston winning it. I think that they invited like six guys there. The kid from Boston College, the running back. You know, they got four quarterbacks in there. They got Jordan Lynch. They got Johnny Manziel looking to repeat. A.J. McCarron, Jameis Winston, the favorite. And then the running back from Auburn, Trey Mason, who came on strong at the end of the year. This is Jameis Winston's award. I don't even remember the last time the Heisman Trophy winner, like, literally came out of nowhere and shocked everybody and won. But that doesn't happen very often. You know, this is Jameis's award to lose, and he's not going to lose it. He's going to win it. But they just like to drum up the suspense, I guess, so that's why they're bringing all these guys. Getting back to the championship games from last weekend, we saw Ohio State fall to Michigan State. We saw an undefeated Northern Illinois team fall to my Bowling Green Falcons. I'm an alum, y'all. In case you can't tell, I'm a Bowling Green alum. So I always ride with my Falcons. So yeah. But then we also saw Auburn knock off Missouri. They proved me wrong. They knocked off the Missouri Tigers in the SEC championship game, in a game that set defensive football back 100 years. I actually got into some Twitter banter with some friends of mine regarding the amount of defense that's played in the SEC. And, you know, some of my friends feel that the SEC has the best defense there is to offer in college football. I vehemently disagree, because if there was, then where has it been all season? That's what I don't understand. Like, there's no evidence that suggests that the best defensive players or the best defensive teams are in the SEC. We've seen Alabama get lit up, and we saw everybody go through A&M, because A&M definitely don't play no defense. The Auburn Tigers, they don't play any defense, because we saw what Missouri did to them in the SEC championship game. And we know Missouri don't play no defense, because we saw what Auburn did to them in the SEC championship game. Those two teams were just running straight up the gut and blowing holes you could drive a truck through. It was insane in the SEC championship game. I don't understand how anybody could sit there and watch that game and be impressed with what they were doing. I mean, yeah, Trey Mason put up some gaudy statistics in that game, and he had a fantastic game. So I'm not, you know, trying to slight him as a player. I think he's a very good player. And his pops was in De La Soul. Did y'all know that? I didn't find that out till Saturday night. But just watching the game, though, it was just play after play. Auburn only ran three plays. They ran the same three plays all night. Missouri couldn't stop it, and they were running right up the middle. And then Missouri would get the ball back, and then they would run right up the middle for significant gains. I'm talking 15, 20, 30, 35 yards at a time. And this went on all night for four quarters. So I don't see where there was any attempt to stop anybody. I mean, those are supposedly the two best teams in the conference. If those are the two best teams in the conference, then clearly there's no defense being played in the conference. So, you know, unless you believe that those offenses are, you know, far and away superior to every other offense in college football, which I don't. And, but anyway, we'll find out in a month or so when Florida State takes on Auburn in the national championship game. I actually like Florida State to win that game. But, you know, my main point to my friends was that the SEC, in my opinion, is overrated by most people. But that doesn't mean it's not the best conference. See, people take that and they feel insulted. Like, oh, you can't say the SEC's overrated. Then you're saying that somebody else is better. It's like, well, no, I never said that. I said you can be overrated and be the best at the same time. The Miami Heat are the best team in basketball, as evidenced by their last two NBA championships. But if I were to call them the greatest team ever assembled in the history of basketball, that might be a bit of a reach. And if I really believe that in my heart, then yeah, I'd be overrating them a bit, right? So yeah, they can be the best and they can be overrated at the same time. And so I just don't understand why there's so much, why people get so up in arms when you say anything the least bit negative about the SEC. Listen, man, I'm from the Midwest. You know, when I learned how to play football, football is about defense. That's how I was raised on it. That's how I understood it. And you can't be a great team unless you play defense on some level. You know, even teams like the New Orleans Saints, when they won the Super Bowl a few years back, they didn't have the best defensive unit of all time, but they could take the ball away and they could still force turnovers. And that was their MO. And so there was still defense played on some level. I mean, what we saw in the SEC championship game was nothing remotely close to defensive prowess on any level. So for anybody to stand there and defend that, they either need their eyes and or head examined. Flat out. But we'll see what that Auburn defense is really made of when they go up against Jameis Winston and the Florida State Seminoles. Because the Heisman Trophy winner ain't messing around. Like they used to say about Omar on the wire. Omar coming. Guess what, Auburn? Jameis is coming.
Jameis! Yeah, my man said he wanted something real, 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 real. Yeah, something he could recognize, something he could feel, 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 feel. Baby girl said she was in the mood for something real, 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 real. Something that could make a move, something she could feel. Lust sometimes can override trust.
said blood spilled out of everything he touched. He crushed everything he crushed, ruined everything he loved. He just wanted to rush. Blamed it on the times being rough, doing dirt with the devil, chasing after the dust. Make a fuss if it's them, but we hush if it's us. That's why my mama said she wanted something real, 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 real. Something she could be proud of, something she could feel, 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 feel. She said they so used to not having nothing real, 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 real. That they don't know how to act, they don't know how to feel, 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 feel. Life ain't meant to come around twice. Yeah, that's why I gotta get it right. They said I got it honest, now I gotta give it light. But sleep on it, that's why God give you night. I mean, I had a dream that God gave me flight. Fly for my own good, so God gave me plight. If I wake up in the morning, now I gotta give him sight. Make him see, break him free, ain't it genius? Show you right, show you right. The game is not to give him nothing real, 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 real. Nothing that they could use, nothing that they could feel, 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 feel. Give him a bunch of lies and teach him that it's real, real. In my rhymes to try and keep them out of trouble. It's being poor, also teach you how to hustle. All they want is some shoes or some rims for they bubble. Now that I got my own, I can hit them with a couple. Cuff my homies so they ain't got no reason to cuff you. That's my plan, if I can, on the man up a button. That's why I gotta give them something real, 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 real. Something they can recognize, something they can feel, 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 feel. To my homies on the block, I gotta give them something real, 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 real. Something that'll make them stop, something they can feel, 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 feel. Yo, FNF Unreal.
Welcome back. We have so much more to get to on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Grammy nominations, y'all. Grammy nominations are out for the 2014 Grammy Awards to take place in February. It's the biggest fraud going in show business. The Grammys, man. I don't understand it. Every year they throw together a best hip hop category, and they never seem to get it right. Either they get the nominees wrong, they get the winner wrong, or they get the winner right, but then that winner doesn't get any love for Album of the Year, or they do get love for Album of the Year, they get nominated, but they never win, right? I wrote a whole article about it last year. It's on the website. It was last year around Grammy season anyway, maybe back in February or something like that. I put Eminem on the face of that article because he is the poster child for hip-hop in the eyes of the Grammy Academy or whatever they're known as. I guess, I don't know what they're called, but the Grammy Awards Selection Committee, Eminem basically dominates the Grammys as far as it's concerned. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't think it was a racial thing. And we touched on this a couple of weeks ago with Eminem and how race impacts his perception as the preeminent white rapper in hip-hop, but this year he was, you know, he just released an album, obviously, but it didn't make the cut for the Grammys. What did make the cut for the Grammys was Macklemore and Ryan Lewis's album The Heist, which came out last October, right around the same time that Kendrick Lamar's album Good Kid, Mad City dropped. They dropped in the same month of October of 2012 and now are both eligible for the 2014 Grammys, both of which received 7 nominations. So that's really impressive. Both of those albums also received Best Hip Hop Album nomination and Album of the Year nominations for each of those. So that is incredibly impressive. I don't remember a time in which a rap album, two rap albums were nominated for Album of the Year by the Grammys, but unless you want to count The Speaker Box and The Love Below, which was a double disc by Outkast, I guess that doesn't really count, right? But in any case, very impressive for Macklemore and Ryan Lewis and for Kendrick Lamar. It was Kendrick's first major label debut, and Macklemore, I believe it was his second album overall, but again, it was a major label release for him, and it was really a good album, but at the same time, not such a great album, and I'll tell you why. I like Macklemore. He's a good dude. He really seems to have a good head on his shoulders. He's smart. If you've seen him in interviews at any point, he's insightful. He's kind of brought hip-hop. You know, when you think of hip-hop, you don't think of Seattle, Washington, right? When you think of Seattle, Washington, you think of garage bands and grunge music from the mid-90s and stuff like that. And Sir Mix-a-Lot, like that's pretty much all that comes to mind when you think of Seattle. But he's kind of bringing Seattle back into the picture on the hip hop side of things. And Brian Lewis, his producer, did all the production on the album, The Heist. I heard the album. Let me put it to you this way: if you like trumpets and if you like pianos, you'll probably like The Heist. But outside of that, I just can't get behind Macklemore, man, because he can't rhyme, y'all. He can't rhyme. Like, I don't like his flow at all. He puts words together. They don't always work, but he tries. You know, I give him credit for trying. He seems to have grown up with some type of hip-hop influence, real hip-hop influence. He cited the Wu-Tang on the album and stuff like that on the song Can't Hold Us. I actually love that song. That's actually a great song. There's no way you can't hear that song and not want to move or something. But, you know, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis had that record. They had the Thrift Shop record, which I frankly can't stand. It was a fun record. You know, a lot of people got behind it, but it was corny to me personally. They also had Same Love, which was a nod to the gay community, trying to bring to light their plight. And Macklemore kind of declaring himself as an ally to the LGBT community. Very, very powerful stuff. And he actually tackled quite a few social issues if you listen to the album. And he talked about that. He talked about making it in this industry. He talked about battling stuff like alcoholism and drugs. He talked about getting over the, you know, the hip-hop culture's infatuation with materialism. He touched on a lot of different subjects on the album, so I can actually respect him for that. And it'd be curious to see where his career goes. I tweeted a little while ago that I don't know that we've ever seen this successful of a rap artist that's been this consistently socially conscious going forward since he basically came on the scene. I mean, we've seen other socially conscious rappers, guys that have been socially conscious throughout their careers, but none of them were as commercially successful as Macklemore has been to this point that I can think of off the top of my head. I mean, I went to YouTube the other day and I watched the Can't Hold Us video, and that video had 99 million hits on YouTube, y'all. 99 million hits. This guy, it appears as though Macklemore isn't going anywhere. He's going to be around here for the long haul, it appears. And I just don't know, though. Even though he's smart and everything, I just can't get behind him lyrically. Now, Kendrick Lamar, on the other hand, all day long. Lyrics, banging. Beats, banging. Concept, banging. All of it. Everything on the album, Good Kid, Mad City, was dope to me. And you saw it on our Tale of the Tape review that we did of that album at the end of 2012. It was the best album of the year. It was the best album to come out in 2012. If you want to look at it in the Grammys window, which is like September 2012 to September of 2013, it was the best album to come out in that time frame also. So Kendrick Lamar deserves to win Rap Album of the Year. And he also deserves serious consideration for Album of the Year. Here's the problem, though. He's not going to win either one, because Macklemore is involved. And Macklemore is going to win Rap Album of the Year, no doubt about it. You can take it to the bank right now. And that's what's unfortunate about it. And I think that's where my criticism of the Grammys kind of comes into play. I don't think the rap community holds him at a higher esteem or necessarily a lower esteem because he's white. But the selection committee on the Grammys, they tend to prop up any white artist when they get an opportunity to in hip hop. And Eminem has been at the forefront of that for the last 10 to 12 years or so. But, and Eminem is great, so don't get me, you know, obviously I'm a huge Eminem supporter, I'm a fan of his work, but even when Eminem has put out trash, like the Recovery album, excuse me, not the Recovery album, but the Relapse album, that record was still received the Grammy Award for Rap Album of the Year, and even Eminem said it was garbage. He even said so on Recovery. He said it repeatedly on Recovery, that that last album was whack, I'm not doing that anymore. That album sucked, and yet it still won the Grammy Award for Rap Album of the Year. So there seems to be this double standard that exists within the Grammy Nomination Committee. For whatever reason, they tried to get on board with hip-hop, and they're trying to show more respect for it in recent years, but yet they tend to slant their voting unfairly in favor of Eminem, regardless of who the other participants are. I don't know that Eminem has even lost a Grammy Award for Rap Album of the Year if he's put one out in that year, so... My money's going to be on Macklemore to win that album of the year category. Jay-Z is also up for Rap Album of the Year, as is Kanye West for Yeezus. So Yeezus could get some serious consideration as well because of the fact that it's, you know, it's that artsy fartsy kind of junk, you know what I'm saying? Kanye West, I mean, you know how I feel about Yeezus. It wasn't a very good album, but he can still get a lot of support from people because of the fact that, you know, it is kind of artistic in its own way, I guess. And that's what he was going for anyways. And so the committee would probably have a lot more respect for Yeezus than the streets did. So therefore, he may get a little bit more consideration than he did from anybody else. Rounding out the nominees for Rap Album of the Year was Drake for Nothing Was the Same. So you got Drake, Jay-Z for Magna Carta, Holy Grail, Kendrick Lamar, Good Kid, Mad City, The Heist for Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, and Yeezus by Kanye West. So again, my vote unofficially, my unofficial vote officially goes to Kendrick Lamar for Good Kid, Mad City. Best rap song. Looks like we had Fucking Problems by ASAP Rocky with Drake, 2 Chainz, Kendrick Lamar, Holy Grail, Jay-Z and Timberlake, Started from the Bottom by Drake, Thrift Shop, which again was garbage, by Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, and was that it? And New Slaves, Kanye West, New Slaves. So the same Usual Suspects plus ASAP Rocky was considered for Best Rap Song. Again, I'm not really sure why Kendrick Lamar didn't get consideration for Swimming Pools. That was a swing and a miss by the committee, for sure. And then, let's see, we also had Best Rap Performance. I don't even know what that means. What does Best Rap Performance mean? What's the difference between Best Rap Performance and Best Rap Song? I don't know. But anyway, they had Drake, Started from the Bottom, Eminem, Berserk, Tom Ford by Jay-Z, Swimming Pools by Kendrick Lamar, and Thrift Shop, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. Not knowing what Best Rap Performance actually means, it's hard for me to say who deserves to win that. But seeing as how Kendrick didn't get a look for Best Rap Song, I'll say Kendrick deserves it for Best Rap Performance. And then out of Best Rap Song, out of the nominees, I'd probably go with Holy Grail by Jay-Z and Timberlake. But, you know, you probably could have found a better song than that from the last year, for sure. Best Rap / Sung Collaboration, we have Power Trip, J. Cole and Miguel, On the Run, Jay-Z and Beyonce, Now or Never, Kendrick and Mary J. Blige, Remember You, Wiz Khalifa and The Weeknd, and Holy Grail, Jay-Z and Timberlake. That was kind of a weird category. I don't even know if it's mandated that all of the songs be singles as opposed to just being records that were put out on actual albums. But, you know, I don't think On the Run was an actual single. And Now or Never with Kendrick and Mary J, I don't think that was either. And Wiz Khalifa with The Weeknd, that wasn't a bad record, but that definitely doesn't need to be considered for any type of serious award or anything. I like Power Trip. Power Trip was pretty dope, and that one should get serious consideration for that award, as should the Jay-Z and Beyonce record On the Run. Not to be confused with Jay-Z and Beyonce's record Drunk in Love.
I do say it's the shit. If I do say so myself, if I do say so myself, if I do say so myself. Hold up, stumble all in the house, time to back off all of that mouth that you had all in the car, talking about you the baddest bitch thus far on sight. Catch a charge, I might beat the box up like Mike. In 97, I bite. I'm Ike. Turn up, baby, nah, I don't play. Now eat the cake, anime said eat the cake. We be all night.
Which seems to have taken the internet by storm over the last 48 hours, but you know, Beyonce does what she does. That's why she's Queen B. Moving right along. So at the end of the day, I really don't feel like the Grammy committee knows what they're doing. So they're gonna just hand the award to Macklemore. Basically, the three nominees nominated for Best Rap Album of the Year that were not Kendrick Lamar and Macklemore have no chance of winning Best Rap Album of the Year because Kendrick and Macklemore got nominated for Album of the Year. So how could they lose Rap Album of the Year and be nominated for Album of the Year? So basically, Jay-Z and Kanye West and Drake, they actually don't stand a chance, really. It's come down to those two guys, and hopefully Kendrick will get the win. But I would be stunned if he did. Macklemore will win that record. But then here's the big double cross. The big double cross at the end of the Grammys. Every time they give somebody a look for Rap Album of the Year, and then they never, ever, ever win Album of the Year. And so, with the exception of Outkast that one year, that was, I think, the one year out of the near 20 years that they've had this award for Best Rap Album. That winner never gets considered for Album of the Year with that one exception. And so, good luck, Macklemore. Maybe he can end that trend for the good of hip-hop, but I don't see it happening. The thing I wanted to make sure that I got to was this situation with Wale and Complex Magazine. First of all, shout out to Wale. I thought his album The Gifted was great, and I thought it was one of the best albums of the year, and it deserves consideration for Rap Album of the Year by the Grammys or anybody else's list or anybody else's criteria, whatever. I thought The Gifted deserved some serious consideration. But the situation with Wale and Complex Magazine is a fascinating and hilarious one, because if you don't know anything about Wale and Complex Magazine, they've kind of had this back and forth for a while. Complex Magazine is known for making lists. If you don't follow them on Twitter, if you don't go to their website or not familiar with the magazine itself, that's basically what they do. They create all these lists, the top 50 basketball players with a shoe deal, the top 10 R&B singers in the game, the top 5 rap verses of the last 14 days. You know, they just make lists. That's just what they do. But Wale always seems to be left off their list. And so we even heard Wale reference that when he went on The Breakfast Club not too long ago. And Complex made a list of the best, I think it was the best verses of the last 10 years or something like that. And I think they named like 50 verses, and Wale was nowhere to be found. Or maybe it was 25 verses, but whatever the case, Wale was nowhere to be found on that list. And he was pretty pissed about it, and he let it be known that he was pissed about it. Now, I don't know if there's any one particular Wale verse that deserved to be on that list, per se, but that list did have verses from cats like Gucci and Young Jeezy and all these other people who aren't known lyricists, and that really rubbed Wale the wrong way. So this time around, Complex Magazine, with it being the end of the year, they named their top 50 rap albums of the year, and Wale did not make the list. So, needless to say, Wale responded much like Kanye West. It was a very Kanye-esque response from Wale, because he cares about this kind of stuff. Just like Kanye constantly needs that affirmation and constantly needs to be praised for his work, Wale's not too far behind, y'all. And so I'm going to play something for you. I'm going to play Wale's response. He actually called up Complex Magazine and spoke to one of the reporters or editors with that magazine and had a discussion with them about why he was not placed on that list. And hilarity ensued. Check this out, y'all.
So you think it's responsible? You think y'all being a responsible publication by continuously to fucking, like, just do, like, all that petty shit? Like, at this point, you know it's got to be personal. And I don't want anybody, you telling me it's not personal, it's like a bold-faced lie. Like, to be omitted from every type of list that y'all do, or be at the bottom of it, or every type of way that y'all can omit me, y'all will. So I just need to know, like, if anybody's ready to keep it 100 with me and be like, yeah, it might be, so you might have rubbed somebody wrong years ago. In some way or fashion, because you know I've had no interaction with the company in years. So to be every time be omitted from everything that y'all do, it's got to be something. So I'm trying to find out if you're gonna be the person that tells me that, or you're just gonna give me the song and dance.
Well, no, I'm not gonna be the person that tells you that. It's not a personal thing, man. It's, you know, we sit.
You need to tell me Juicy J album better than mine. Is that what you're trying to tell me? You need to tell me everybody put on that fucking list. No, don't play me, man. I'm sorry, I came with you simple right now. But it can go completely another direction. I'm just, right now, respect me, dog. Like, I respect me, dog. Like, respect the fucking culture right now, man. Because right now, it's like some petty shit going on right now. And I'm trying to get to the bottom of it in a civil manner, yo.
There's no disrespect, man. I mean, straight up, I really...
Man, fuck you, dog. You know I'm disrespect every fucking time, dog.
Is it safe to come out now? Damn, man. Wale was not playing. He was not messing around. I'm telling y'all, he takes this stuff seriously. He really, Wale is an artistic cat, and he really, you know, even though art is subjective, I think he really is passionate about it, and he wants to be recognized for his art and for his ability, man. And whether you thought his album was dope or not, let's be real here. It deserved to be in the top 50. I mean, to me, it's in the top 10, probably the top 5. And I think you could argue it as the best rap album of the year. But there's no way that it should have been omitted from the top 50. So Complex clearly has an axe to grind with Wale. And Wale clearly is fed up with it. And there's a couple of things that jump out at you when you hear something like that. First of all, this interview was released by Complex Magazine, which means that Wale was recorded without his knowledge. I don't even know if that's legal. You know, I've seen instances where you call in places and they tell you, you know, we're on a recorded line just so that you're aware of it, or for quality assurance or for whatever. I don't even think you can do that and not inform the guy that he's being recorded and that it could potentially be released, you know? I mean, I guess Wale should have been smarter than that to see that if he was going to fly off the handle like that, the Complex might try to use it against him to get back at him again, just taking another jab at him. But at the same time, that doesn't really seem ethical. Nor does it seem ethical to omit somebody from a list that clearly deserves to be there. Because now you, and I agree with Wale when he said, you're just making your publication look less credible. So I think at the end of it, I think Complex Magazine comes out looking pretty bad in this scenario. I know that their motive was to try to get Wale to look stupid, and he did look a little stupid. I ain't gonna front, he looked a little dumb. You can't really carry yourself like that. And I know he's a rapper, but he seems like a good dude, you know, by and large. From what I've seen of him, he seems like a nice guy. I don't really think he's a thug or nothing like that. I don't really think he's about to bring the goons up to Complex Magazine and had a toolie with him. I don't think he's that type of cat. But he needs to show better composure in that situation. And maybe he was just being himself. I'm not saying he was trying to be something that he wasn't. But he's got to show a little bit more self-control and restraint than the act. That much of an ass. That was a bit over the line. But my biggest grievance is with Complex in this scenario, because again, number one, they omitted him. from a list that he should have been on. Number two, they omitted him from a list that he should have been on, in my opinion, due to the acts that they have to grind against this guy. They clearly don't like him and have made it known that they don't like him in the past and are still acting on those feelings from wherever it came from. I don't even know how it originated, neither does Wale, but from wherever it came from, they clearly are still acting on this hatred for this guy. And number three, they recorded him without his knowledge and then released it to the public. So to me, Complex Magazine looks a little suspect. I mean, you wouldn't omit, you know, Johnny Football from the Heisman ceremony just because he was acting an ass a little bit. You know, he still made it to New York, didn't he? So there's no reason why Wale shouldn't have been on the top 50 list, period. Last thing we want to touch on before we get out of here, there was a situation that arose this past week between two legends of the gridiron and the hardwood, respectively, that being the great Jim Brown and the great Kobe Bean Bryant. Apparently, they've been butting heads through the media. Jim Brown recently went on the Arsenio Hall show, a little Cleveland connection there, and basically said that a lot of athletes these days don't take social issues as seriously as they should. Kobe's name came up, and Jim Brown basically said that if he had to form a summit, much like the summit that took place back in the day during the Civil Rights Movement, with Jim Brown, and actually it was Jim Brown, Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and a few other great athletes, they were all met up in Cleveland, and they were there to support Muhammad Ali. And of course, Muhammad Ali is famous for refusing to go to the Vietnam War because he called it, you know, a white man's war and this, that, and the third. And he stood up for what he believed in. And it was a testament to civil rights and the state that the black community was in at that time. And in addition to that, they were standing united behind Muhammad Ali, who was against the Vietnam War in all its forms. And so those great athletes of that time banded together and stood up and stood beside Ali, you know, who they looked at as their brother in those days. And so now, to bring it full circle, we have Jim Brown saying that if he had to form a summit like that today, there are certain guys that he would not call, and Kobe Bryant would be one of those people because he didn't feel that Kobe cared about social issues. And one of the reasons why he cited that was because Kobe didn't grow up in America. He said, well, Kobe grew up in Italy, he grew up in another country, and therefore he's not as plugged into these social issues that affect many people, specifically the black community. And that is why Kobe would not be on that phone tree. You know what I'm saying? Kobe responded on Twitter by saying, quote, a quote-unquote global African-American is an inferior shade to, quote, American African-Americans? That doesn't sound very Mandela or Dr. King to me, sir. So Kobe sent that out on December 12th, basically taking a jab back at Jim Brown for calling him out. Now, I agree with Kobe that because he grew up in Italy doesn't mean he's any less in tune to the needs of people in America or black people or anything like that. So I'm with Kobe on that one. But I'm also with Jim Brown because there's a lot of these guys that seem to duck a lot of these social issues, specifically as it pertains to African Americans. Now, one issue that everybody kind of took notice upon was the Trayvon Martin tragedy. You know, we saw the Miami Heat post the photo with everybody with the hoods on, with the hoodies on, everybody had the hoods up. We saw that photo went out, and you know, we rarely see any kind of social stands like to that degree from somebody like LeBron James or Dwayne Wade, for that matter. But I think that there's a lot more that could be done in our communities. And if you were to look at something like the genocide that's taking place in Chicago, for instance, Dwayne Wade's a Chicago native. Derrick Rose is a Chicago native. Say, for example, the two of them were to get together and form a summit in Chicago to stop the violence. You know, they've been protesting in the streets, and there've been rallies and stuff to stop the violence in Chicago on the South Side. They've been doing that for a long time. But in order for people to really stand up and take notice like they should, maybe the cause needs some athletes like Dwayne Wade or some people with the star power of a Derrick Rose coming together and calling it for an end to the genocide that's taking place up in Chirac. You know what I'm saying? If Wade and Rose were to team up to do that, then maybe LeBron and Kobe and those guys and some other players would come and join them as well. Maybe. But I don't know of any of the biggest stars that the football and basketball has to offer today. I don't know if any of them would have the courage to, frankly, initiate something like that on their own. Muhammad Ali was nothing but courage. And he had the courage to not only stand up to the U.S. government, but he also stand up to a lot of Americans and threw his title away, essentially, for what he believed in. And he didn't have a problem with standing up against that adversity. And then he was backed by his brethren, the Jim Browns, the Bill Russells, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbars, and so forth. Maybe if Derrick Rose or Dwayne Wade, and I don't mean to lay it all on the feet of Rose and Wade, so I'm not trying to, you know, chastise them specifically. I'm just using this as an example because the murder rate in Chicago is out of hand. It has been for the last several years, and young people are just dying in the streets, and a lot of people don't seem to care. And so I feel like that is one issue that's affecting many African Americans to this very day. And just because of the fact that those two guys are from Chicago, I'm just using them for this example. But if they were to come together, if one of them had the courage to stand up and say, enough is enough, we got to do something about this, maybe then we would see some of these other people do it. But I don't know that any of those guys individually have that makeup. And that's, I think, what Jim Brown's point was trying to, that's the point that Jim Brown was trying to make. I don't think Rose or Wade or LeBron or Kobe or Adrian Peterson or, you know, Darrell Revis or Calvin Johnson, I don't know if any of these guys have that kind of makeup that Muhammad Ali had back in those days, or that Jim Brown still has to this day, to stand up and speak on social issues, to speak on injustice. And so, again, it's something that we need to be mindful of. If Kobe doesn't like what Jim Brown had to say, I can totally understand why. But I think, I hope that Kobe went home. And again, I'm not even saying that Kobe doesn't do his fair share of, you know, community service or work in the community. But I hope that Kobe Bryant went home, and when he laid his head down that night, maybe he took a step back and thought about it and said, you know what, maybe I could do more. And maybe he will do more when his playing career is over. I don't know. And again, I'm not trying to say that Kobe is a bad guy or that Rose or Wade or LeBron are bad guys. But I do think that that is an opportunity for the, considering the star power and the influence and the dollars that this particular group of young men that I referenced have, I think a lot of change could be made if they chose to do it. So that'll wrap it up for the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. I didn't mean to get that heavy, y'all, at the end. I mean, I just, something that I wanted to touch on before we got out of here. And I felt like it got a little serious, you know what I'm saying? I didn't mean it to get that serious, but you know, we got podcast number 3 under our belts. Woo! And we'll be coming back at you again very soon, y'all. Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. I'm your man, JB Hicks. Follow us on Twitter at HHS Report. Stay plugged in to hiphopsportsreport.com for the latest content on sports and hip hop. Keeping it 100 all day, every day, 365. That's the only way we know how to do it, y'all. Stay classy. Peace. Guess up green, I mean, better listen up careful and keen, I mean, a poop on as a rock and come in. We celebrate like I finished probation, boy, boy. Not head with no chaser, boy, boy. From the mouth, I can spit out a razor, boy, boy. Open up your face, you like your boy, Roy. In his prime, eat food, dinner time. Junior gong, past the Guinness. Handle business, black velvet sippers. Females never bid us, farewell, they with us. Cause we arrive on a scene just like a high beam, nah, I mean. Don't let us have to make the nine scream, nah, I mean. At your racial policing regime, nah, I mean. Spiritual well like an Elohim, nah, I mean. In a casino or yacht, wherever I'm seen, my brothers and sisters are never forgotten, nah, I mean. Don't wanna hear another soldier drop, nah, I mean. Another dope addict is shot with the morphine, and feds are indicting my block, nah, I mean. They wearing reds from their shoes to their top, nah, I mean. I'm wishing that all the violence would stop, nah, I mean. When I like this song, I'm sorry, nah, I mean. And some boys soft like ice cream, nah, I mean. From a boy, make the feds intervene, nah, I mean. Wishing I were gonna take him trapping, nah, I mean. Parabellum, them a itch up in a spleen, nah, I mean. In a Queen's gunman reign supreme, nah, I mean. Kingstonians are real blood fiends, nah, I mean. The world is a big crime scene, nah, I mean. Yo, yo, Mr. President.
Yo, Mr. President.
What you doing for my resident?
What you doing with my resident?
Yo, Mr. Minister.
Mr. Minister.
Why you being sinister? Hey.
Yo,
yo, Mr. President.
Yo, yo, Mr. President.
What you doing for my resident?
What you doing with my resident?
Yo, Mr. Minister.
Mr. Minister.
Why you being sinister?
Somebody.
in a real buffalo in a Rastafari regime. Bush bungalow where me dwell with my queen. Trash to the bone in a camouflage green. Enough of them where can't go the places we've been. Enough of them where can't see the sights where we've seen. That's why them face all a twist up and a lean on me. They better mind we kick it off clean on me. Man a gangster just like Yamdeen. That mean them can't serve Congo jet quotes up in a mean. A who you want come in convene a mean. Attorney of Iraq and come in a mean. Me pocket them green like Sperlina a mean. Me regular fly out and fly in a mean. The stadium park like sardine a mean. Can't guess my speed up as the world need caffeine. Run out of red and antihistamine. Watch over gold them come in like Listerine. You think I lie way better than Al Pacino a mean.
It's genocide, it's a genocide. It's a genocide, it's a genocide. Fifth floor cooking raw, had my own supply. Cause of capitalist ways, that was back in the days. So now I do rap and it pays.